Hey, that's us. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth. That's a much better song than that Let It Go Frozen business you were playing a minute ago, Shane. Much better. Well, we're getting a late start to the show this evening because we had lots of Blackhawks stuff to get into, which is all good, although it was not all good for them, per se. But we're going to catch you up because we still have lots to talk about on this show. And so right now I would like to welcome to the show writer, editor, woman of many titles. She's an editor at Good Housekeeping and Monkey Bicycle, and she's also a writer for Runner's World. Please welcome to the show Laura Carney. Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, thanks for staying up late with us. Sorry it was a little later than we thought, but we're very happy to have you on. So you write for many places. You do lots of wonderful things, but there's a particular cause that you have aligned yourself with that is very, very meaningful to you. And I'm hoping that you can kind of take us through what that is and what happened and all of those things.
Sure. Basically, my dad died in a distracted driving accident with a teenager who was on her phone about 12 years ago. And it's only been, I guess, about the past 2 years that I've kind of been public about it and writing about it, even though, you know, I was 25 when it happened. So sort of to cope with what had happened, I just wrote about it. So I have, you know, like 15 or 20 or so essays that I was writing, you know, kind of about my relationship with my dad, but also, whenever I would kind of encounter an experience in my life where I could use his guidance, like, it would just happen. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I was pretty prolific before this happened.
Yeah.
You know, I had other things I was interested in writing about. And then all of a sudden, when this, like, tragedy happened, it was like every single thing I wrote, he would just pop up in.
Sure.
So I didn't really know what to do with any of them. And then I got a job at Good Housekeeping. And, I mean, this was something that was very much in my private life. Like, I wasn't really publishing these things. And also because I'm a journalist, so I thought, well, there's no I in journalism, you know, so it's kind of difficult to write about yourself. So I was working for Good Housekeeping, and there was an article about an organization called End Distracted Driving. And I thought, well, I didn't even know this existed. There's, like, groups that are trying to make a difference with this. So I called them up and met this, you know, wonderful man named Joel Feldman, and his daughter died in a distracted driving accident. She was walking in a crosswalk, and I believe the man was on his GPS or was, like, reaching for an iced tea or something, and he just, you know, crashed right into her, and she was 21 at the time. And Joel, you know, goes to schools across the country, spoken to, like, 250,000 people, and really, I kind of developed this relationship with him that really, he kind of was a mentor for me. It really gave me the courage to start doing things about this. So I started publishing a few essays, and I went with him to speak in a school. And I had kind of started running around the same time. And it occurred to me, oh, people run the New York Marathon for various charities. So I thought, well, I could do this. Like, this could be my charity. And it was really just promoting that over the past 6 months that I thought, well, I could also use my writing to promote this particular thing. So it turned out much better than I could have even hoped for. I raised about $1,200. And it's funny because each time I have an essay published, I mention, oh, I have a collection of essays, like, in a book. And I don't actually have a publishing deal quite yet, but it feels much more real that, like, this is something that's definitely going to happen.
Sure.
So, and the other motivation was my fiance proposed 2 years ago. And at the time I said, you know, like, I really want to feel like I've done something positive with this chapter of my life. And, you know, it's not something I'm just, like, kind of bringing with me into my marriage, which I kind of see as another chapter, like, I'm going forward. So it's like every single thing I've done with this has had an incredibly positive outcome. And just the fact that I've connected with actually a few other young women who have lost their dads or other family members, like, that's been incredibly meaningful to me, because it's sort of like when it happened and I was 25, I felt so alone. It's like, oh, I couldn't talk about it. But now it's like there are so many people. But at the same time, it's horrible that there are so many people who've experienced this, because it's just such a huge problem.
Sure. And so what are the facts that we don't necessarily know about distracted driving? I think we have seen a lot of campaigns about, you know, not texting and driving. You know, we see that, but I don't know if the numbers are reflecting that yet. So having such an inside look at this issue, what do you wish more people knew?
I don't think your average person even probably knows what the laws are in your state. I mean, I admit that I myself didn't know, like, you know, I was looking these things up today. I didn't know what the laws were in every single state. And so right now, it's about 46 states that text messaging is banned in, and 14 states have a ban on handheld cell phones. But at the same time, they've been learning that it doesn't really make that big of a difference. Like, the crashes are kind of still happening. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because, I mean, there was a news study that just came out that said even if you're using, like, a handheld phone, you're still distracted. Like, you could be using it, and then it says, like, you know, it takes as long as, like, 27 seconds after you've dialed a phone before you kind of can regain your focus on the road, which, I mean, if you're driving at 25 miles per hour, that's, like, the length of three football fields, basically.
Yeah, that's significant. And I saw a study on, there's a great site, I recommend that everyone go to this. It's NDD, as in distracted driving, ndd.org. And Laura Carney has an essay on that, and it is the story of what happened with her father and the person that the woman that was on her phone in the other car that hit him, that took his life. And it is a really, really moving piece. And I recommend you go find it, go see it. Again, that's ndd.org. But also on there, there's a lot of really interesting information. And one that caught my eye because of a personal connection, I lost a family member to a drunk driver. And there was a study that they linked to on that site comparing the similarities between even having a conversation on a hands-free device, how distracted you are as compared to your delayed reaction time if you are behind the wheel and impaired. And it was pretty striking. And I think, you know, come to, I think we all know, I don't think anyone would argue with the, you know, the idea that no one is going to be responsible behind the wheel when after they have been drinking. I think that's there was so many campaign after campaign after that about that issue years ago and continues to be. And we've seen those numbers kind of start to come down. But yet, you know, to compare them that in such a stark way was very significant. Something I didn't realize that it was that comparable.
Oh, yeah. You know, of course, I'm really sorry to hear about your loss with that. I had no idea. But I mean, yeah, and also, they're saying now that distracted driving is actually more of a cause of death for teens than drinking and driving is. Mm. So that's pretty amazing as well.
And I think I recall in, it was either that study or a different one about the result is often so much worse in a distracted driving, because a lot of times in drunk driving, the person who has been drinking doesn't tense up, doesn't react, doesn't have time to. And whereas in mm-hmm. distracted driving, they're, you know, will have a moment and try to react. And sometimes that ends up being, you know, a fatal mistake, truly. It's very complicated.
I mean, the overcompensation
right,
for it, you mean?
Right. Whereas a drunk driver sometimes doesn't even know what's happening, and they just kind of, you know, they don't have a chance to react or to tense or something like that. So sometimes these, the distracted driving ones end up so much worse because there is a last second moment of looking up and realizing what's about to happen and having the presence of mind to react, but far too late, really. It's very, who's doing the best work in this area? I mean, NDD.org seems like they're doing really good work. A lot of car insurance companies seem like they're talking about this a lot, but who's really kind of leading the path here around this issue?
Well, you know, the people I know who I've talked to, like Joel, like I mentioned, he's mm-hmm. been doing amazing work, and that's why that's the charity I chose when I was running the marathon. And, you know, there's a woman named JC Good who, like, she has a campaign called Hang Up and Drive, and mm-hmm. she has a very interesting story. She lost both of her parents on her graduation day because of someone on a cell phone.
Oh,
and, you know, she sustained injuries and had some brain injuries at the time. And, I mean, I think she's okay now, but, I mean, she's been on CBS, mm-hmm. like, she's writing a memoir. She just has made it her life mission mm-hmm. to go and speak. And I think because she's so young, you know, that makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then Emily Stein, she lost her father. She's from the Boston area. And she has a campaign where she, I don't know if it's a campaign or her new sort of motto where she says, crash, not accident, because she wants people to understand, you know, the implication of it's really not an accident if you're, you know, you're texting or you're on your phone,
mm-hmm.
you're actually like that's a
you're making a
premeditated
choice.
Thing.
Yeah, that's
yeah, you're making a choice.
That's a wonderful motto. That's a really that really does drive the point home quite well. So as you took on this marathon and you started raising money for around this issue and certainly a lot of awareness, you know, what was that emotional process? Because I know that running, training for and running a marathon brings out stuff. It just does. And so what? How did that manifest for you?
Yeah, it was funny. I didn't know that going into, you know, I had no idea what that was going to be. Like, I had run a half marathon before, mm-hmm. and I'd been running for about 2 years. And, you know, what I did know was it had really changed me mentally already. You know, I mean, I kind of had stopped even social drinking around the time I started running. And all of a sudden, it was like I had this energy to do things and create things, like, more than I had before. Because I think when you run, you know, it does something with your thoughts. Like, it kind of helps you process things. Like, let's say you had a day where you're stressed out or something, and mm-hmm. you know, you go for a good run, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, wait, like, that wasn't about me, like, that thing that happened, you know? Like, I can totally separate myself from that. And it's like you have this, like, safe space that you go into. And I think there's something about, I mean, I don't know exactly the scientific thing, but when you're going through this forward motion as you're running, it's like you're kind of going through whatever you need to go through. You're feeling it. And, I mean, by the time I was marathon training, like, it surprised me. I mean, I had some, you know, 10, 15-mile runs where I was, like, yelling at some points. I mean, it was near, like, nighttime, and nobody was in the parks, thank God, or it'd be like, there's the crazy woman. But because I think I just had so much anger that I was carrying around inside of me from this thing that happened. And I knew that I needed to have this, like, focused experience to get through it. And, you know, by processing it, I kind of have healed myself from the anger I sort of had at a world that could let this happen. And by doing that, I feel like I'm better able to help other people through, you know, just through telling the story and expressing it.
Sure, certainly. And as for the essay collection, how many essays are in there at this point? And kind of what do they span? Is it childhood stories or kind of all a testament to your dad or all of those things?
It's a testament to my dad. It is a lot of childhood stories because a lot of times, you know, I would be experiencing something in my life that just would, you know, spring up a memory from something when I was a kid. So it is a lot of things like that. I have about three I'm still working on finishing. My goal is to kind of try to publish them in a few different places throughout the rest of the year and then try to compile it into a book. But, I mean, I think mainly my goal is I want this to be, you know, a relatable thing. You know, there was a study a couple years ago on something called experience taking. And that means, you know, when you read something, I think it was Ohio State, you read something in literary fiction and you feel like you've gone through it yourself. And, I mean, they did like a scientific study on it. Like, they had a story about, you know, someone learning how to register to vote. And these kids in college learned this, like, they read this story. And when they read it in the first person and it was, they thought it was written by someone at their school, like 69% of them went out to go vote. Like, it actually changed their behavior. And I almost, like, I wonder sometimes, is that the missing piece of this problem? Because they have the bands, they have, you know, the commercials about it. I mean, you know, I remember being a kid in the 80s and seeing, like, you know, say no to drugs, just say no. Or, you know, you just see it and you kind of think, oh, yeah, you know, I know I'm supposed to do that, but that's not going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. Like, most kids think they're invincible. They don't think anything's going to happen to them. So my goal is, you know, this happened to me when I was 25. So if I have these stories that are both, you know, from that time period and also some from my childhood and just have this narrative that is relatable to someone who's around that age or even a little bit younger, you know, maybe that there's a chance. Maybe that would make a difference to someone. They would think about it like, oh, I know what that feels like. I don't want to be involved in that.
Sure. And so we hear this mostly as it relates to teens, but do we see this behavior from other older age groups too? Or is it mostly teens?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is, you know, I've read that it's 50% of teens admit that they're doing this, even though they know that there's bans. Like, it still continues to be a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think they're more susceptible just because, you know, this generation has always had phones. They don't know life without it. I mean, I think there was an article a couple years ago that said teenagers don't even really care about getting cars anymore because they just want to stay home and, like, text people. But one of the things that Joel Feldman does when he gives his talks, which I think is really effective, is he talks about parents and he asks the kids in the room, you know, how many of your parents drive distracted? Because he really believes it's sort of like parents can be like, do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times teens are seeing their parents behind the wheel, like using a phone. So it's a big problem, I think, across the board.
Hmm. Well, there's so much to this, and I'm so glad that you're taking it on. I wish it was under better circumstances, and I'm sorry for your loss of your father. But all the work that you're doing seems so very important and so impactful. So I wish you all the luck in the world with it. And now that you have done the marathon, I wish you so much luck with the essays. They're lovely. And again, everybody, go to ndd.org and look for this. But also you can find her work in Good Housekeeping, Monkey Bicycle. She writes for Runner's World. You're everywhere, Laura. We can find your byline all over the place. Is there a website or social media handle that you'd like to connect with people through?
Yeah, I have a website where you can find some of the essays we're talking about. It's bylaurakarney.com.
Great.
So you could go there, and I actually have one in the December Good Housekeeping that's out right now.
Excellent. Everybody, go read it. It's an excellent piece. I highly recommend go pick up a copy of Good Housekeeping and read this and take it to heart and talk with the people that you love about this issue. It's really, really, really important. It's a big deal. And as you've heard, it's just a moment can change lives in unbelievable ways. So please take it to heart. Keep this in your mind. Don't drive distracted. Please, please, as a favor to all of us. Laura, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about your mission. It is certainly a worthy one, for sure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Have a wonderful evening.
Thanks, you too.
All right. All right, my friends. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to get you to news with our buddy Roger Badish. But first, all the things we're getting to when we come back, I want to hear from you because we have so much to talk about with Thanksgiving coming up. And it's not even going to be a full Thanksgiving because Black Friday has totally crept into Thanksgiving. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think it's okay? Are you going to go do it? Are you going to shop on Thanksgiving evening? Or do you think it's a terrible idea that is ruining Thanksgiving or somewhere in the middle? Let's talk about it. 312-981-7200. Let's take a little break. We'll be back in just a bit. 720 WGN.